Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
Hey there, podcast listeners. Stoked you're here with us. Of course, we took a bit of a hiatus, but the Boardroom Podcast is back. I do want to tell you about, of course, the Boardroom International Surfboard Show coming up October 7th and 8th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. We're honoring Bing Copeland this year as the icon of foam. So eight shapers are going to get in the shaping bay and attempt to replicate some classic Bing designs. And those eight shapers, Thomas Beckson from Australia, Josh Peterson from the East Coast and Hawaii, Hank Warner, Dane Purley, Michael Arenal, Wayne Rich, Roger Hines, and defending champion Rick Rock. In addition, if you're a board builder and you're listening to this and you want to be a part of the Boardroom International Surfboard Show, we do have booth space available. And you can find out more information at boardroomshow.com. Just click on the exhibit link in the upper menu bar. On to the show. Justin Turnus is the founder of Dark Arts. Dark Arts Surfboard Technology, carbon vacuum bagged surfboards. That's sort of the Reader's Digest version. There's actually much more to it. And we speak about some of the nuance involved here. What's really cool about Dark Arts is the conviction that Justin has about these boards. They're made right here in San Diego, California. These are American-made products shaped by world-class shapers and then glassed with a refined carbon fiber vacuum bagging technique, one that Justin's perfected. On this episode of the Boardroom Podcast, Justin Turnus. Let us begin. All right. Well, welcome to the Boardroom Podcast, Justin Turnus, the founder of Dark Arts Surf. It's been a long time since we chatted. I want to say at least a couple of years, maybe before COVID even. A lot's been going on. But why don't we give the listeners a little background on you? Who, you know, where'd you get your start? Who are your mentors? How did you get into this surfboard building career?
I basically started out when I was about 19 and just excited about surfing and surfboards, and got a job at just a poly shop that does production, and just kind of started at the bottom, you know, and I didn't know anything. And I think that was around 99. And yeah, that was kind of the beginning. And then, you know, just literally worked every day at that shop and soaked up as much knowledge as I could from everybody that would come in and out, you know. But it's just, and the innate interest in surfboards and how they're made. And I guess as a kid, I was always interested in, you know, how things work and making things. So if I'm really interested in something, I kind of get obsessed about it. And then I go down like wormholes, and this has been just a big one for me.
Well, as you look back on your career, and I know you've got a lot ahead of you as well, but if there was one person that was super important, that was like vital to either mentoring you or to just giving you some, not one person.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think looking back, I mean, I was really young, and I come from a really small little town called Hamul, and I grew up on a dirt road, and, you know, I wasn't around a bunch of people, you know, as a kid. So I guess people were impressionable, and I learned a lot about just being around people at that age. Like, I was kind of just thrown into the mix of like how humans work. So I mean, the guy that owned the poly shop, Brian Jones, I mean, he was a character and an interesting person, but he was like so like business kind of crazy and just interesting to me. I guess as far as business goes, he was the first one. And then from there, you know, shapers were always interesting. And then once I started working with Firewire, I really got thrown into the mix of like, this is how like corporate business people think. And then, I mean, it was just a learning crash course in humans and business all the way from the beginning. So I guess there's a few people, but I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, no, it does. But let's talk a little bit about your time at Firewire. Because as I recall, you were doing layups. At the time, Firewire was building custom surfboards. They had a factory here in San Diego, didn't it?
Yeah. And that was the real eye-opener, was that beginning with Firewire, when Dan and I were basically just kind of making them out of his shop off of Pacific Highway. We went from a poly-based kind of shop to, you know, wrapping EPS blocks with balsa wood rails and then vacuuming sandwich construction over that and then glassing it. Like, literally that whole process to me was just like, wow, this is a trippy way to make a surfboard, you know? And then riding them and then just feeling them bend under your feet and move differently. Like, that was like, all right, there's a whole nother element to this thing that I had no idea about, you know, from just being in the poly world. And then that was just a wormhole, you know? I was like, okay. And that's when it started, kind of, you know?
Yeah. And so for the listeners, you're referring to Dan Mann.
Yeah.
And yeah, this must have been a 180 degree flip from just like laying up poly boards sort of in the standard way to all of a sudden we're doing things completely different. And in some regards, that sounds like it was an important stepping stone for you.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I guess that going back to the last question of, you know, who would make the biggest impression on me, and I would say Dan Mann, for sure. As just a person, the way he thinks, you know, who he is as a person is, he taught me so much about how to, you know, let go of like perfectionism and just a radical way of thinking. I mean, he's definitely been probably my biggest influence, and how I think and how I approach things in making things, his influence is heavy on me for sure, you know. I would say that.
And as you sort of referred to, probably one of the nicest guys in the surf industry, if not just in the entire earth. He's such a good guy, Dan Mann.
He is. He's a great guy, and I to this day we stay in touch, and he's come out to the house and we hang out, and yeah, he's a great guy. Really cool guy.
Let me switch gears a little bit. We spoke last week and you were off to the Surf Ranch Pro, getting geared up for it. Yeah. What's your take on the Surf Ranch Pro? It's finished up. We have two champions, Carissa and Griffin Cole Pinto. What was your experience like there?
That's a good question. You know, it was interesting. There's a ton of action there, man. It was the weirdest thing. It's like you show up and it's in this little town and there's a dirt parking lot, and then you walk in and it's just like, I actually came from Vegas the night before. I had to play some music in Vegas, so I had a super long drive, but coming from Vegas and then walking into that place, it kind of had a similar Vegas vibe. It was so strange. There was people, you know, at the bar, and there's giant TVs and there's Red Bull tents. And I mean, there's just so much action. It's so weird. It was just like weird, but it was cool. It was interesting to watch, you know.
Is this your first time there?
You know, I was there, I think 3 years ago, But it was, I think it was during the pandemic, maybe it was 2 years ago. And it was kind of a very small scale event. And I went there and it wasn't like this time. This was like more bigger production, you know? But I talked to a lot of the athletes and I got a chance to connect with them. And I also talked to Ross, who's a good friend, and at the end, and he was like, you know, for everything that people don't like about this event, you know, it's actually kind of cool because it's a different layer and a different element in surfing for these athletes. And they have to overcome like this mental aspect of this place and figure out how to compete on this wave that goes for a pretty good distance that, you know, it's strategy and it's mental in that aspect. And it's difficult, even though it is a man-made perfect wave. Like you saw athletes fall. I mean, you were like, how do you fall? I mean, it's just, there's a ton of things going through their head. And I could see that in these athletes when they're walking to the ramp, like it's pretty cool, you know? So, yeah.
It's definitely unique. Who is Ross that you were speaking of? Ross who?
Sorry, Ross Williams.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And going back to your first time there, I'm always interested. I know that my first time there, it was mind-blowing when that thing fired up and that train moved and that first wave came through. Like you don't realize what a grand undertaking and what a grand thing, you know, piece of technology that they made. It's mind-blowing when you see the first wave. You're like, holy mackerel, this is way better than I anticipated.
I totally agree. It is wild when you see that first wave. If you've never been there, it's pretty wild. It's an incredible wave, and the engineering feat on that thing is amazing. There's a ton of water moving when you're standing at the wall, and it just backwashes over that little hump. It's pretty crazy, man. It is super crazy.
Yeah, no doubt the best man-made wave out there. There's just no denying it. What about this little flare up that Gabe Medina has caused on social media? Do you have any take on that, Justin?
You know, I'm not like a super contest person where I like follow it heavy, but just being there and being around it. And I mean, I could see a point where, you know, scores maybe went away they shouldn't have. But I'm not really a person to judge that, and everybody's bias is kind of different. I could see their point, you know, that they could be frustrated, but I think sports is kind of like that. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I think you just have to kind of better yourself and, you know, go the other way with it. I don't know how to explain it, but you know, I can see their frustrations for sure. I think when I look at a heat and I'll watch them surf, I kind of try to score it myself. I'm like, huh, is that better than that guy's? And I'll maybe put a mental score in my head. And then, you know, it comes out maybe way higher. And I'm like, wow, you know, that's kind of interesting. And I'm trying to analyze it and figure it out. And I'm not the expert there, you know? So, but yeah, I could see if you're, professional career hinges on that, it can be really frustrating. I could see where that can be really hard, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And like you say, I think that, you know, I mentioned to somebody the other day, people have been complaining about judging in surf contests since the very first surf contest. And
yeah,
it's sort of part of the fabric of the whole competition thing. But
yeah.
But specifically for you, Justin, you brought some of your dark arts boards up there. I imagine you bring boards for, and help me out here, you bring boards for Felipe, for John. Who else do you bring boards up there for?
Let's see. Bear Mamiya, he's been riding them for a bit. And Kanoa Igarashi he was like one of the first ones to ride it at the pool. He was on them. And Stephanie Gilmore is now on them. We made a couple for Italo, and I talked to him, and he just didn't have enough time prior to that contest to get on them. But he said they definitely feel amazing. And I think he's going to be on them for El Salvador. From our conversation, he's excited to get on them.
Well, that's what interests me is what I'm trying to get at is when you show up, and I imagine there's some anxiety kind of welling within you. You've got all these beautiful crafts that you've poured your heart and soul into, and you show up and you've got Felipe and John John and Stephanie and Baron. And they're probably like looking at standard construction and they're looking at your boards. Like, is there a moment where you're like, well, we'll see which one they pick, you know, like, or do you know going up that they're all waiting for you to arrive or they're already on your boards? Like, is there a moment where you're like, oh, bummer, they grabbed a standard PU, or, oh, killer, they're ripping on my dark arts. So, like, is there that moment, or do you know going up there that these guys are settled into what you're making?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because there is that total anxiety and stress of, I don't know what they're going to ride. I was pretty sure Philippe was going to ride his. I was pretty sure Kanoa, but 100%, like, we did one for Ethan, Italo, Stephanie. I mean, a ton of boards. I'm missing a few as well, but yeah, for sure. Like, I don't know what they're going to ride. And I was pretty sure John was going to ride his new one that we did. But yeah, it is stressful. It's super stressful. And leading up to that contest here at the shop was like, we did so many team boards for that thing. It plus production. It was long days. It was long days, long weeks. And, you know, I usually don't get to connect with the athletes. So for me going up there, talking to Stephanie, talking to Italo, and, you know, it was great because I didn't know, I thought, you know, maybe Italo wrote it and he just didn't like it. And the truth of the matter was, like, he just didn't have time, you know? So that makes me feel good, because I'm usually kind of in the dark as far as, like, you know, why didn't he write it? You know, I don't know, because I can't just really reach out and all that.
Yeah.
But it's super stressful. And then, you know, when you watch him ride it,
that's sort of interesting, Justin, that you can't reach out and speak to the athletes. Like, when I think of, like, Formula One guys that are building engines and cars, I imagine they're speaking directly to the drivers. And I do know you have, and forget, you know, let me know if I'm wrong here, but I know you have a direct line with John Florence. Uh-huh. It seems like you should have a direct line with these people, but I guess DHD and the board designers are in the middle and they don't want you to have direct contact.
Yeah. There is a thing about that. And I understand that to a degree, but to your point, if you want to make any real progress with these athletes, communication between athlete, shaper, glasser, especially in this type of situation, you know, to get the most out of it, more communication, the better. Actually, Darren Hanley was here at the shop yesterday. I love that guy. He's so easy to work with. And, I told him just that. I said, you know, we can make some really good progress if we keep the lines of communication open. And he was like 100% all in, no problem, you know, whatever you need. I was really excited about that. As far as,
you mean he's open to you, like, reaching out to Ethan and reaching out to the staff?
Well, even if I don't need direct communication, I'm just telling him, like, listen, if they give you communication, like, I would like the board to be lighter and a little more flexible.
Yeah.
Please give me that information when we make the next one, so I can create a baseline and work from that. You know, I don't necessarily need to talk to the athlete, but if you talk to him, please let me know the feedback that you're getting so I can improve upon their board, you know? So, I get that with John. John and I, we definitely have, like, a closer collaboration with his stuff. I've never talked to Philippe. I've never talked to Kanoa, really. I've never talked to any of the Sharp Eye guys. So it's interesting because, yeah, all you're going off of is, like, well, I guess the last one worked pretty good, so we'll just kind of glass it the same and cross our fingers, you know?
Yeah, it is very interesting because, as you know, when we think about John Florence and carbon, I immediately think of sailing and his, like, he's kind of a hard goods geek, you know, like, he's into everything, every little nut and bolt of his sailboat. And
yeah.
And I'm sure he's that way. So, and then there's other people. And frankly, I might even fall into this category But there's other people that are like, dude, just give me the board and I'll wax it up and go ride it and we'll see what happens. You know, like that aren't as like technically inclined, you know?
Yeah. Yep. 100%. He's like he's a super nerd when it comes to materials and his boards. And the more interesting and more out there they are, the more excited he gets, you know? So, and it's always chasing something with him, but it keeps it really fun kind of for both of us, you know?
So having DHD into the fold now has got to be exciting because of obviously Steph, but as well, Ethan Ewing, who is arguably, you know, the most stylish or the most together package as far as bringing everything to the wave face. Tell me about that. The Ethan Ewing thing, is he going to be riding your boards in El Salvador? Where's he at with the dark arts technology?
Yeah, I agree. He's really exciting. Just watching him at the surf ranch was really cool. And I think for him, it sounds like I need to, we're going to work a little more. Darren was here yesterday. We shaped one for him, went through that. And then I need to work on weights and flexibility with him on the build. So I don't think he'll be on them in El Salvador, but I am going to build him a couple, two or three to get under his feet soon so that we can start making some progress and maybe for, you know, maybe for the finals day. I don't know.
You know, when you say flex, when somebody goes, let's work on the flex, are you thinking different foams? Are you thinking different stringers or no stringers? Like what goes in, or maybe there's just less resin or a longer time in the vacuum bag process. I don't know.
Yeah. So basically I like to just do stringerless, you know, as a base with EPS. And then as far as flex, I would look at what type of carbon or shifting the carbon at an angle. And so for Ethan, I'm going to do a non-woven, and then we're going to play with some tapes and what width those tapes are and where to put those to kind of control, give it the sense of a stringer, but still give it a lot of bend. And then I'm going to give him a board that's probably just under 5 pounds that will feel pretty lively and see what he thinks about that, you know?
That's amazing. So I didn't even really recognize the fact that there's non-woven weaves that you're using. There's different ways that you lay them relative to horizontal or vertical on the board. There must be a ton of notes that you make when you make a board for, say, Ethan. You're like, okay, we did this, these four vertical, this one horizontal, and we did no weave. And like, you must have spreadsheets up the galore just to make sure that you're on top of it.
Yeah, for John, I did. And I made so many for him. I had like this book and spreadsheets. It was kind of out of control. During the pandemic, it was getting kind of crazy. But yes, for something like Ethan's, I think I definitely will have either a mental note, because it's just a couple boards, but as it gets more heavy into it, sure, we'll keep track of it. But yeah, I think, you know, it's weird. Philippe's board is our standard dark arts build, you know, that plain weave, it's everything we sell. And he won a world title on that. And he shows up and it's incredible. You know, part of that is that design from Marcio, that quad fin design. But he really likes the liveliness of the carbon. I also had a really interesting conversation with Stephanie at the pool, and she's so excited about the boards. And she did ride a non-woven at Surf Ranch, and her board was really light. It was 4 pounds. Wow. Under your arm, it just feels like it's, and she said, and she's like, I was a little nervous. I was thinking it was going to be too light and feathery on the face. But then when she rode it, she was like, man, it was unreal. So she rode that in the heats. It had a white top. But she's so excited because she said, for her, it's the opportunity to maybe just take a handful of boards on tour, not two board bags. It's maybe one board bag. And for her, that's super exciting. And she also said at Snapper, she actually ran somebody over with the pink top board she was riding. And she broke their board. And she was like, I was devastated. And I flipped over my dark arts and there was nothing wrong with it. And from that point on, she was just like, okay, this is really cool. Like, it performs and it lasts, you know, and that's the whole goal.
Yeah, for sure.
That conversation was, it lit me up. Like, I was so excited to hear that, you know, it was just great.
That's pretty classic. She ran somebody over and we're all excited.
Yeah. I mean, that was her. She was devastated at one time, but you know, she was like, wow. Excuse me. So it was cool. Cool story.
Well, look, you mentioned something that always interests me, which is the weight, you know, 4 pounds, 5 pounds for Ethan. You've made me a couple boards and you and I've had this discussion where I'm like, Justin, I think it's too light for me. I don't know why. I'm a 58-year-old male.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like there was any drive. And maybe I'm just not, you know, pro level or you know, which is quite frankly is possible. I mean, I'm not pro level. But you and I were talking about making a PU board for me or making a board that has more drive. I've never been an EPS guy. I've tried and tried and tried.
Yeah.
And I keep fooling myself going, I think I would like this one. And I didn't like it. And so I just think I'm a PU guy through and through.
Yeah.
What does that mean for me? Like, do you think it's PU that makes me feel like I'm not getting any drive out of the board? Like the board doesn't want to go? Or is it, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I think, I think a lot of people have that question. And I think from hearing feedback from the past few years with these top guys and getting their opinions, it's partly, yes, you're used to that PU sensation and that weight and feeling and that dampening. And then, you know, when you jump on a carbon vacuum bag EPS board, you know, it's got this weird, like where it kind of hangs and stalls and it doesn't want to go maybe for certain people. And I was talking to Tony here that helps at our shop and runs things. And he's like, you know, a lot of these athletes that like it, they're like really fast moving athletes, you know, like they're quick on their feet and they can utilize it. And, you know, and for John, you know, he loves the carbon and he surfs great on it. But then when it comes to like competing on it, if he's not 100% locked in mentally, like he struggles on it. And so what I'm building for him now and what we've been working on is that carbon Kevlar board. And that is a PU core. I add a little something to the inside of that to give it a little more spice, but that board is something that like people like you would love, where it feels like a PU. That weight is a PU type of weight. It's a really good feeling PU. The core is PU, but now you have this electricity from the carbon and the carbon Kevlar that give you this kind of electric sensation. It'd be like a PU, you know, on steroids kind of.
Yeah.
And those guys like Ethan Ewing, he rode a PU glassed in epoxy. That's what he rode at Surf Ranch. So those guys, you know, they'll look at that wave and be like, okay, I think I need something more than a PU, but I'm not really used to the carbon yet. How can we spice it up a little bit? And it's like, well, their first go-to is just wrap it with epoxy because it gives it a little stiffness, but it gives it a little more zip to it, you know?
So do you mean a carbon layup at the epoxy resin?
No, Ethan was riding just a PU blank and it was glassed with 4 ounce and epoxy resin.
I see. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So.
Well, how far did the dark arts boards go at the Surf Ranch Pro? Was Felipe the guy that took the technology to the furthest at this year's event?
I think he did. Yeah. I think he took it the farthest. I can't remember if it was just the semis or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're making boards for a bunch of surfboard brands. DHT is the latest one. SharpEye, of course. IPA, a Rusty, John Pizel album. How do these relationships get forged? Are guys calling you up? Are you actively marketing to these brands, or how does that work?
Yeah, they usually reach out. I've worked with Matt Album since I was in my garage, you know. So I already have a relationship with him. I've known Marcio for 20 years, and he brought me work when I was in my garage. John Pizel, same thing, built John John's first two out of the garage. But then everybody else has kind of reached out. We don't really actively approach. I've had Eric Arakawa reach out. I mean, I feel bad because a lot of people wanted to get involved, and it's like, I don't have the capacity.
Yeah.
And I don't have the ability to do it for everybody.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like approaching the growth as like a slow grow, and, you know, try not to go too big too quick, and just, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard. Yeah,
it's probably smart though. I mean, better to do a few really good than to get overextended.
Yeah. I keep telling people that, you know, the name of this game is kind of make a product that's done really well, that performs really well. And, you know, if we can only make X amount, it is what it is. You know, like, I'm not looking to take over the polyester market or the epoxy market. I'm just trying to create a product that falls in line for the industry, that the industry it benefits from and gets healthier in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, it's interesting. Like, we spoke a little bit about Firewire at the beginning, and there are some other brands that are making carbon boards. Firewire has this, and I'm not super up to speed with it, so I'm going to sound a little ignorant, but the Thunderbolt stuff and that volcanic that Firewire is putting out seems similar, at least aesthetically, to what you're doing, or they're trying to be similar. Yeah. I know that Lost has something that they're some sort of carbon lip that they're excited about. How do you feel about that? Do you see that as they're trying to come after you, or do you, what are your feelings on that?
That's a great question, man, because when I saw that stuff in the beginning, you know, it was kind of disheartening, because it's like, man, I put my heart and soul into this thing, and I try to just create a lane and just stay in my lane, you know, where it's carbon top to bottom. And I want to be that best product in that marketplace for that. And then when people come out doing the same thing and making it cheaper and making it overseas, or making their color jobs look like ours, you know, I mean, I get it, but, and that's the surf industry, right? And my goal is to not do that, you know, is to not, I don't know. I'm going to stay in my lane, and I'm just going to do my lane the best that I can do. It's okay. Like, I think people know, you know, the Lost boards are made in Vietnam and they're cheaper, and, you know, there's boards that are made of carbon and they come out of Cobra, and, you know, people get a great markup on those things when they land here in the States. But in my honest opinion, that stuff's not great for the industry. You know, I think, when you can create something that is a premium here and you just do it well, and even if it's low volume, you know, and it's a high priced product and the top surfers in the world are on it, that's good for the industry. You know what I mean? I could have easily taken this thing, you know, overseas and mass produced it and just flooded shops and squashed. I mean, people would hate me, you know what I mean? And I'm not in it for that. You know, it's like, it's not money for me. It's not, you know, anything like that. It's more like, let's make something that's positive for the industry and do that and do it well. You know what I mean? So.
Plus, from my own experience, when I've been to your factory and talked with you about boards, I get a real sense that I'm getting a custom surfboard. Like you're like, Scott, well, let's try this and we could do this. And there's like a little bit more, more ingredients to the magic potion over there at Dark Arts. Like, I feel like it's not just like, yeah, I'd like a carbon surfboard, please. It's more like, hey, let's build you something crazy here and bitching and fun. And let's mix this with that. We can do this and we can do that. Like, there's just more parts to it, or, you know, with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tony Curto here is on the phone every day. If you call our factory and you have a question about what to order or what, you know, you are thinking you want to order, Tony is great. And he'll walk you through the process of, you know, what he's ridden and his opinion and what he'll try to direct you in the right way of your purchase, you know. And the phone rings every day. And I think it's important to have that, you know, ability to feel like you're ordering a custom. And you are. I mean, you can order custom sizes here, and we have a great shaper here, Alex, and he's going to shape it. And it's a normal factory here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not like you're ordering like a cookie cutter size and this is what you get and it comes in a box and have fun, you know. You can come here and pick up your custom dark arts board in person and, you know, we'll give you a shirt and, you know, chat and all that, you know, which is cool. Should be like that, you know.
Absolutely. That's the fun. That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
You mentioned Kevlar. We touched a little bit on Kevlar. I'm sort of interested in this. I heard you mention it with on the broadcast at the Surf Ranch Pro with Peter Mell. What would a normal surfer like me, would Kevlar be something that I would consider?
So with that whole board, and I didn't really have time to get into that, that whole broadcast was wild. I've never done that before. And he was like, you got to talk quick and all that. So I couldn't really get into it, but that product is basically, I'm trying to bridge the gap between our EPS dark arts and the sensation of a poly board. So that's that product that guys that don't like EPS, chattery, maybe their whole opinion on it doesn't work for them. They're PU lovers. That carbon Kevlar board is the answer for them. That's their dark arts answer. So it's not production ready yet. I have a couple more tweaks I'm working on with John to try and just tune it in a little more. But I'm hoping next year, for everybody that's on the fence of, you know, I don't like how those stock dark arts feel in choppy situations or whatever, this one is going to be your go. And we'll have some demos, I think, and all that. So.
Cool. And when do you anticipate that would be available to the general public? Any time frame on that? I know you mentioned next year, but is there like...
I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, it's the hardest surfboard to make. It's really hard.
What makes it so difficult?
Well, the non-woven carbon on the bottom, it's really hard to bag onto PU. And then we don't wrap the board in fiberglass. So whenever you're dealing with Kevlar on a surfboard, if you don't cover it in fiberglass, you can't really get into it if you sand. So I can build the board. I've had a couple guys in the shop. We put a one or two through, and it's not easy. It's a hard surfboard to build. It's the hardest board I've ever made. But John really loves it, like loves it. So there's something to it. And I think it's worth, I don't think we're going to make a lot of them. We might make 100 of them. So yeah, one of those.
I know Kevlar's been around for a while. I remember, I want to say even in the 80s.
Yeah.
Canon came out with some Kevlar boards. So it's obviously not new to, you know, to sort of the, you know, biochem, like the tech world's been using it for decades.
Yep. Yeah. And I think it's about how you apply it in that sandwich. I think of maybe the surfboard build as a sandwich and what layers you're using, you know, to make that sandwich taste good. And, you know, it's pretty complex. You know, the non-woven on the bottom is going to give it this like rail to rail torsional kind of movement that gives it a different feel. But then the carbon Kevlar on the top gives it a lot of dampening with the PU blank. It all kind of just blends together to this kind of spicy, like, wow, kind of board, you know?
Yeah. And regarding PU, is there a specific brand that you like? There's Millennium and Arctic and US blanks. Is there one that you feel is more effective?
You know, I'm not a PU blank expert. I think the guys that shape that day in and day out, I know Paizel's an Arctic fan, and you know, there's US blanks. We use US blanks PU, and we add a little EPS. They add an EPS piece in there for us. That's what we use now, and I'm not an expert in that field, to be honest with you.
Well, what about, and maybe this isn't relative either, but what about dark arts tech with like a varial foam or Javier's XTR or other foams? Like, have you tried varial or XTR?
Yeah, I've vacuum bagged on varial when I was playing in my garage, and you know, it's good foam. There's a lot of cool properties to it. So when I think about stuff like that, that foam, when you're dealing with that foam, it's a very like slow moving foam, you know. When you bend it, it bends and it moves, but it moves slow. EPS reacts real fast. It's more stiff. You have to look at, if you're going to bag carbon onto a foam like that, it's going to be a whole different feel from a plain weave EPS board. You know, those athletes that ride our stuff, they're looking for speed and fast reacting equipment. If you bag varial foam, that foam is going to be a lot slower moving. Even when it's bagged in carbon, it's going to feel totally different. So for me, when I bag PU, that's why I add EPS. And I've tested with John wood stringers, every different width, bagged in different types of carbon. I've sliced that bread every which way I can with the top guy in the world. And it's either a no-go, or it's not good enough, or this isn't very exciting. And if he doesn't get excited, he just won't ride it, because PU for him is great. You know, if you can't build something that's better than PU, there's no point in riding it, especially for the top guys. The fact that John's riding something that's different, he believes in it, you know? And that's the thing with me. It's like, if I can't get John excited, if I make him a board and he's like, and I've done it, I've made him carbons where he's like, this thing just feels like a typical epoxy, not interested, you know? And that's with a different type of carbon that's slower moving. And he's like, there's no point to him. Unless this thing is electric and it goes fast and he like is like, wow, he'll just, it's PU, back to PU, which is, I totally understand, you know?
Do you do a thing where when you build John a board in a certain construction, you build yourself the same exact one so that you could go surf blacks or whatever and be like, I want to kind of feel what John's talking about?
I don't, because I feel like the typical, say an average surfer, it sounds interesting, but you're just not going to be able to connect on the same level. You know what I mean? If I give you two short boards that have an eighth of a difference of tail rocker, you're probably not going to feel the difference. John will feel the difference. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I don't, but, only because I know that, you know what I mean? It doesn't make sense for me. You need the top guys to validate and test equipment. You have to. I mean, you can give the average surfer a board and they'll just be like, this thing's amazing. But that, you know, doesn't mean anything. So. Yeah.
What about, and you know, as you mentioned, John, my mind goes to pipeline and goes to big outer reefs, on the North Shore. Where are we at with dark arts surfboards and big waves? Like a quiver of dark arts boards for John, like maybe even the Paizel Padlock for surfing that outer reef left that they all go to, or Pipe or Sunset. What are your thoughts on dark arts and bigger waves? Maybe even Puerto Escondido.
Yeah, I don't think John Paizel is kind of interested in exploring that. You know, I don't think it would do anything for him. I don't think he's excited about it, which I get. Billy Kemper reached out, I think a year or so ago, and he wrote a dark arts and he was like, I would really love to get that in a big wave gun. And I I reached out to John and he did, but it just kind of went to the wayside. I think that there is something there and it could be explored. I think KT does really good stuff with, he does great stuff with Kyle Lenny. And I think that's really cool. I'm so busy just trying to improve the short board performance side with these guys that I don't have the time right now, but yeah. I think it's cool. I think there is definitely a thing there that needs to be explored, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I could see Dark Arts PU just for the strength factor, you know, like less broken boards out there.
Yeah, I think in that situation, that would be fun to test, you know, and work with those athletes. That's the fun for me, is that side of it, you know, chasing improvements for them, squeezing out as much performance in their equipment as possible. And but it's hard, you know, like John Pizell is super busy and you know, his program is his program, and I'm super fortunate and thankful that he gives me the opportunity to make boards with John. So I don't try to bug him, and you know,
right. Well, what if some big wave surfer, like that's on, let's just say like Tom Love, for instance, but I believe Chris Christensen's making his boards. What if somebody like that came up and said, "Hey, I would like a quiver of big wave guns." Do you just not have the time to go down that right now because you're so focused?
No, if someone like that reached out and they said that, you know, I would say, great. I would say, you know, get the shapes and let's talk about what you want it to be in the end result. And I can do that for you. Absolutely. If somebody like that reached out and they said, hey, I'm going to get some shapes from Chris and I want to get him wrapped in Dark Arts, I would be excited to do that, you know? Yeah, that would be fun, but I'm not going to chase like figuring it out.
What about locally here? Like, do you have guys go, hey, make me, you know, or whoever, like Sharp Eye or even you, like JT, make me a gun for blacks and obviously in the Dark Arts. Like, are there 7 foot six boards down at blacks this winter?
Yeah, we don't get a lot of big wave inquiry stuff at all, really, to be honest. Yeah. It's never been that for us. It's more like just performance shortboards and kind of grovelly stuff.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it can be done. Like I said, I think KT does some great stuff and that just proves that, you know, there's something there, you know.
No doubt.
Yeah.
What about foil boards?
I have the foil king, Kyle Knox. He's the foil king right now, and he's just like over the moon about foiling.
I know, he's got me all fired up. Believe me, I've seen his boards and I know they're Dark Arts.
He's like next level. His mind when it goes to foiling, it's out there in outer space. Like he'll come in and talk about design and all this stuff, and it's wild. It's really cool. It's great to see passion in something like that from him. But yeah, we can do some great foil stuff. Actually, I think the foil boards that we do, from what Kyle says, are the best, you know?
Yeah. And is that one of your designs? Is that like, if I wanted a foil board from Dark Arts, would you just make me something that you made Kyle, or do you have, or do I like reach out to my shaper and go?
Yeah. No. Yeah. So like Kyle's board, we make that board. I make that board under the JT, and that's basically the go-to foil. He's tested that thing, and we've done three different foil designs, and he's like, the first one's the best, you know? And so that's kind of the go-to.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And what's going on with your musical background? You were in Vegas playing music. I know you play bass.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I kind of put a lot of my fun stuff to the wayside to just focus on Dark Arts. So we got invited to play punk rock bowling in Vegas, and we played this biker bar. It was like, it was actually really cool. Last time I played was a year ago, and it was just a little show, but we used to play before Dark Arts. I would play with all the big 90s punk bands, Strung Out, Lagwagon. I mean, all those big bands that I grew up listening to, I had the chance to play with them previous to Dark Arts. So yeah, we went to Vegas and did a little show, and it was fun. I love playing music. I really do. It's I honestly wanted to be that musician, and it's really a passion of mine, but I don't have the time, you know. This thing consumes me.
And what, like, do you just pick up the bass and show up, or do you guys practice, or is
for that show? For that show, yeah. The guitar player lives in Colorado, and he literally just flew in 2 hours before the show, and we got on the stage and we played, and yeah, we don't really practice, no. So we practice ourselves to the album, and then we go up on stage and do it, but, you know.
Is it all originals that you guys have been playing forever?
Yeah, we put out an album in, I think it was 2016, and we did a lot of shows from that album.
What's the name of the band?
The band's called Skipjack. And the latest album is a soundtrack to a eulogy. And that album we played with, like, Good Riddance, Strung Out a couple times, Punk Rock Karaoke, shared the stage with, like, Greg Hetson and all sorts of great punk kind of legends, you know? And that was all prior to Dark Arts. I was making boards in my garage and playing a lot of music. And then it kind of took a shift where it was like, this thing has a chance. It's either you go for it and make Dark Arts happen, or you're just going to make a few boards in your garage and play music. So I decided to jump off the cliff with Dark Arts and really give it a go.
And it's been going gangbusters, man. I mean, I'm so stoked for you, right? Things are great.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's been really hard. I'll be honest. Like, it's hard, you know, manufacturing anything custom, something new, it's difficult, you know. It's hard, but yes, it is good. We're getting some great exposure and great partnerships, and we've aligned with the manufacturer in Australia, so we're going to start getting boards over to Australia, so that's kind of the new,
that's exciting
for us. Yeah
sounds like you're gonna be going to Australia.
I would love to. Yes. I had the conversation this morning. I need to go over there and figure that out. And, you know, I'm still figuring out here, and I'm so busy, Scott. Like, when you hit me up, I was like, I'd love to do a podcast. And you're like, how about this day? And it's like, my schedule is with the two kids and taking them to school. And it's just crazy, man. Yeah. But,
crazy, yeah. Crazy in a good way.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I've noticed, I believe, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I've noticed that I think there's board builders that are specifically making boards for wave pools. And I mean boards that shouldn't be ridden in the ocean. Is that the case? Is that something that you sense? And in fact, are you doing that?
It's funny that you say that, because I think you know Chris Russell pretty well. I think I just saw him and he said to say hi. So Chris says hi. Cool. Yeah. But he approached me last week, and, you know, he's like, I have a couple materials that I think would be great for maybe a wave pool type board. And I think, yes, some people are doing something like that. And, I think there is a build for a wave pool board, because obviously there's like a concrete bottom and they get dinged a lot and damaged. So you would need
salt water.
Yeah, so you need something that kind of bounces around without getting cracked, you know. Yeah. And that's probably a Kevlar, a Negra type build, you know. But anytime you wrap something in fiberglass, it can crack. So, and then how do you approach that sanding of the Negra Kevlars on the outside without wrapping it? It's technical, you know.
What's the name of that company that Chris Russell works for?
Graphite Master.
Yeah, Graphite. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's see, a couple more things and then I'll let you go. I know you're a busy guy. As you know, the Boardroom International Surfboard Show, of course, presented by US Blanks. It's coming up here in October, and we're honoring Bing Copeland as the icon of foam. Any thoughts on Bing Copeland?
He's, you know, Bing's boards are amazing, you know, he's a legend. I I'm a surfer of the 90s, so I mean, I don't have a lot of experience in that area, but
I put you on the spot, didn't I? You're like,
from a design, from a design aspect, I mean, I have the utmost respect for all those guys, you know. They paved the way and ground the pavement, you know, just as I'm trying to do this with carbon. They were the innovators and purveyors of design back then, you know, and we all take pieces of that, I think. So that's cool. I think there's people that, you know, they shape that style of board and make those boards today, and hats off to them. They do a good job.
Well, you probably don't know this, but 2023 marks the 50th anniversary of the licensing deal between Malcolm and Duncan Campbell, the Bonzer brothers, and Bing Copeland to have the Bing brand and label start to make the Bonzer. That was 1973. So this year, for best in show, we have a category, one and only category, is the Bonzer.
Cool.
And as you mentioned, anyone can enter. It's $1,000 first prize. So any board builders that are listening to this, consider entering. But I'm telling you, Justin, because I'm expecting to see a JT Bonzer in the best in show. Again, it's free to enter and anyone can enter. Of course, I'm hoping that Dark Arts gets a booth, but
What if we did a carbon Kevlar Malcolm Campbell Bonzer?
That's what I'm talking about, brother. I love it. Those guys are judges too, by the way. Those are the two guys that are judges. They would love that.
So how about I get Malcolm to shape the Bonzer and then I'll do a carbon Kevlar with that?
No, that's not gonna work. That's not gonna work. You gotta create the Bonzer. I know you got the chops to get it done. And that would be fun for you. I bet you it'd be a fun little side project.
That'd be fun. Is Malcolm, you said Malcolm's gonna be a judge?
Yeah, Malcolm and Duncan are both gonna be there to judge it.
Cool. I think I've been having some conversations with Malcolm lately, and I think we're going to do a Dark Arts Malcolm Campbell kind of collab, maybe.
Sweet.
Yeah, we're going to do maybe a limited run of Malcolm Campbell boards under Dark Arts here soon.
Wow. Maybe that's what I'm going to be getting.
There you go. I think
everything. Bonzer or PU Kevlar. That would be so sick.
I think a lot of people would be into it. He's such a great guy. So yeah, we're working on that as well. There's a lot of fun stuff we're working on.
All right. Well, cool. Listen, Justin, it's always great catching up with you. I know I saw you at the, what's that board demo called?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What was that?
Camp Shred.
There you go. Camping thing.
Yeah, Camp Shred. It's a killer little thing that Scott Desiderio puts on there at Cardiff. But anyway, it's like I said, it's great catching up with you. I know you're busy. Get back to work. Thanks for being with us here.
Thank you, Scott. Really appreciate it. It was great catching up.
Okay, buddy. We'll talk soon. Talk
all to right, you later. Sounds good. See ya.
Build like this, some folk build like that. But you, way I'm built, don't you call me fat, because I'm built for comfort. I ain't built for speed. But I got everything. Oh, a good girl needs. Some folk rip and run, some folk believe in sign, but they want me, baby. You got to take your time, because I'm built for comfort. I ain't built for speed. Because I got everything, all the good girl needs. We'll be right back.
And don't forget to post your job for free at linkedin.com/surf. That's linkedin.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.